ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
I hope and pray I will still be able to stay on the NDIS. Because at the end of the day, autistic people are getting targeted.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
This podcast uses the name and voice of an Aboriginal person who's died and includes references to suicide.
Kirsty, hello again.
Hi, Erin.
So up to the final episode of Tammy's story, which is the series that you've been reporting for Background Briefing. And last time we spoke, you told me how Tammy ended up in prison in the first place.
So once ago, you came to station wanting to be mocked up.
Yep.
Or do you want to get us a jail?
Yeah, it'd be nice. I went into like a small psychosis and I thought someone was after me and I wanted to just be safe. So I went to Woolworths to get charged.
Okay.
But I could come here and be safe.
I'm going to put you on a CRO, conditional release order, for 12 months, okay?
Thank you, Your Honour.
As far as I'm concerned, that should mean you'll be released.
Tammy was never released. She died alone in her cell from drinking too much water, without prison staff understanding what was going on. Tammy's family wants the police and the health system and the prisons to learn lessons from her death.
I'll never have the opportunity to share pivotal moments with her, be it moving overseas to pursue my dreams and goals, see me fall in love, or walking me down the aisle on my wedding day.
It's just obviously such a sad situation all around for the family. So, Kirsty, what else is there to this story?
Well, Erin, there's more. Tammy's story doesn't end there. So 9 months ago, I got a ping in my inbox, an email about an inmate who died in unusual circumstances.
Okay.
They landed in prison after they'd self-represented in court and said they didn't want bail. It turns out they had schizophrenia. In prison, their mental health got worse. The email described how the person was placed in a solitary observation cell under 24-hour CCTV surveillance, where they then started drinking multiple cups of water.
Yeah.
And when they collapsed, no one noticed or went in straight away.
Wow. Wait, is this Tammy that we're talking about?
No, it's not Tammy.
It's another person.
Yeah, this is Daniel Turnbull's story.
Wow, that is just almost eerie, the similarities with Tammy's case.
It really is. He was only 35 years old and he died the same way that Tammy did, from polydipsia, drinking too much water, in the same prison system, in the same state, just 2 months before Tammy.
Just 2 months before Tammy died?
Yeah. And the person that contacted me is a woman called Rebecca Ferreira.
Danny is my half-brother, and he was born when I was 13. It was a very close relationship that I had with Danny.
Danny had a difficult childhood, but Rebecca remembers him as a warm and affectionate kid.
He loved the sea. Even as a baby, right through to when he was a boy, he'd stop and say, "Oh, look at that bird," or, "Oh, the ocean looks beautiful," or, "Oh, it's so sunny today." He was always his happiest when we were out.
And that makes it all the more tragic for Rebecca that her brother, like Tammy, spent the final days of his life alone in a cell. On his last day, he drank around 240 cups of water over 9 hours. That's more than 40 litres.
Wow.
And no one noticed.
Mm.
And when he collapsed, it took 44 minutes before anyone entered his cell.
I've seen the stills of Danny in the moments he collapsed and then was unresponsive on the floor. It was an extended amount of time. When I see that, but the devastation is that that's my brother and he needs help and is not being helped.
Yeah. So, Kirsty, why didn't that happen? Like, why didn't anyone step in? Is it a bit like in Tammy's case where the guards weren't doing the checks that they were meant to?
Yeah, it's kind of similar. And at the coronial inquest into Danny's death, the guard said they just didn't know to look out for polydipsia. An expert told the coroner it's a condition that's hard to spot. And the coroner who investigated Danny's death accepted this, and she found he received adequate care for his mental health condition.
Hmm.
But that's not what it looks like to Rebecca.
A huge amount of finger pointing, a huge amount of it's not my fault, I didn't know. All coming back to this apex of we didn't know about water intake.
So that's two prisoners that have died from drinking too much water when they're meant to be under 24-hour watch. And both times the guards say they didn't know about the risks of polydipsia.
How come?
Well, that's a good question. Because it also happened to another prisoner a year and 9 months before Tammy died.
This is a third death in custody from drinking too much water.
That's right.
Gosh. So what do we know about this third person?
So his name is Trevor Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
He's a 35-year-old Warramaya Eneyama man. And in this case, the prison staff knew about his polydipsia and they tried to manage it.
Mm-hmm.
They monitored his water intake. They gave him weekly blood tests to check his sodium levels. And if he was showing signs of water intoxication, they turned off the water to his cell. Despite all of that, he was still able to drink enough water to kill him.
Wow. And so was his death investigated as well?
Yeah, it was. And that investigation was also finished before Tammy and Daniel died.
So it was actually on the radar of the authorities that there were weaknesses in the system and that this was a potentially deadly condition.
That's right. And when Rebecca sent me that email telling me about her brother, she didn't know anything about Trevor's case. And when I told her, she was angry.
There were no learnings from that at all. That's appalling.
Because if something had been done about it, she believes that could have helped her brother or Tammy.
It's not the great mystery they deemed it to be when Danny passed.
Corrective Services New South Wales, which runs the state's prisons, and Justice Health, which provides prison healthcare, have now updated their policies so that guards have to alert a health worker if an inmate is drinking an excessive amount of water.
Okay.
They did so after these deaths. Before I got that email from Rebecca, I'd been investigating Aboriginal deaths in custody with my colleague Joanna McCarthy. We'd been trying to get our hands on coronial records to see if there were any common themes showing up when people died in prison. We ended up finding these volunteer law students at the University of Queensland who've been individually downloading coronial documents from around the country and putting them into one searchable database. So we got all those files and then built our own database. And then we got an AI program to search it, looking for patterns. And so we're really using AI as a bit of a sorting tool. We knew it would get things wrong, but it gave us a pointer on which of these cases we needed to look at. And then we read and fact-checked each one.
Yeah.
And that's how we found out about Tammy and Trevor.
So the AI search picked up on the polydipsia cases.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
So we went and read those cases, and that's why we knew about Trevor and Tammy, who were both Aboriginal, but we hadn't come across Danny yet, who isn't.
Yeah, okay.
Once we knew about all three cases, we decided to try a broader search. We asked the AI program to identify every case in New South Wales over the past decade where the person who died had schizophrenia, Indigenous and non-Indigenous.
Okay.
And that's when we started to see other cases that reminded us of Tammy's.
In what way?
Well, they all involved people with schizophrenia. And to give you an example, we found the case of a man known as MH. He died by suicide while he was on a wait list to see a psychiatrist in Goulburn Prison.
Wow, okay.
We found the case of Jonathan Hogan, a Wiradjuri, Ngiyampaa and Murawari man. He had schizophrenia and was experiencing psychosis when he went into prison. He got no treatment for 3 weeks. He had multiple psychiatric reviews cancelled and he was put in a cell with known hanging points where he died.
Oh, gosh, that's terrible.
We found the case of Junior Finica, whose mental health got much worse after he was put in a safe cell with limited human contact, and who might have survived had the guards responded to his knock-up calls. And we found the case of Simon Cartwright, who died a year before Tammy. Like Tammy, he was in a CCTV observation cell. He had schizophrenia and he couldn't get a mental health bed. He went hours without being physically checked, and he died of septicemia, a treatable condition.
And Kirsty, were all of these cases investigated by a coroner?
Yeah, they were. And some of the findings were very scathing. In one case, the coroner even said New South Wales Corrective Services should not be placed in a position to care for people with severe mental illness.
Wow. And the cases that you've mentioned there, when did they happen? Like, were they before or after Tammy's death?
In all of these cases except one, the findings were handed down before Tammy died.
Okay.
All up, we found 19 inquests over the last decade which identified deficiencies in the care or supervision of people with schizophrenia. And when we expanded that to look at any other mental illness, the number jumped to 39. And in a third of those inquests, the person who died was Indigenous. Among them, Tammy and Trevor.
Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander communities have been engaged in hundreds of inquests nationwide, and they all surround the same issues. Things like harsh and punitive bail laws, things like inappropriate prison healthcare, things like poor policing practices.
Nerita Waite is a Yorta Yorta and Ngurrindjeri woman who leads the peak body for Aboriginal Legal Services, which represented Tammy's family at the inquest.
There are many Tammies that are fronting courts across Australia day in, day out.
It just seems quite shocking that with all of these years, decades of debate around especially Indigenous deaths in custody and all the focus on closing the gap when it comes to these preventable deaths, the issues are so well documented and yet there's not been the system change to stop it happening again.
Yeah, and we had the 1991 Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody that recommended prisoners receive health care that's equivalent to the community standards. In many of these cases, the coroner found this standard wasn't met.
If you speak to any Aboriginal family who has gone through the coronial process, they will tell you that it didn't lead to them feeling a sense of justice, because inevitably no one is really held responsible. There is no accountability. There is no guarantee that recommendations will be enacted and that deaths will be prevented in future. We know that prisons are not a suitable place to treat mental health issues, to treat disability. But yet, when you look at the data, the vast amount of people sitting in prisons have either a disability or a mental health condition, or they have both.
And that's what we found so striking. When we were going through our database, reading inquest after inquest, the same issues came up and similar findings being made by coroners in New South Wales. And over the course of 10 years, the same mistakes were made over and over again.
Wow.
In our database, you hear all these echoes of Tammy's story.
Yeah.
And one of those stories is Bailey McKendar, a 20-year-old Wiradjuri man who had anxiety and panic disorder. Like Tammy, he wasn't seen by a mental health team when he urgently needed it. He was placed in the care of a risk intervention team in prison, known as a RIT team. You might remember that from the first episode. The RIT team put him in an assessment cell because he was at risk of self-harm. He hated it. He couldn't even leave for exercise. He had panic attacks, but they were ignored. And when he screamed in distress, the guards told him if he didn't stop, he'd be in there much longer. Like Tammy, his mother called to try and speak to staff about Bailey's condition, and her calls didn't get through. Finally, Bailey was so desperate not to go back to the observation cell after a hospital visit that he escaped, ran to a nearby wall, and fell 8 metres to his death. the coroner, Elaine Truscott, was scathing about what happened to Bailey. She cried as she handed down her findings. We've had her words revoiced by an actor.
Something has to change. These findings and recommendations will not stop the court sending young Baileys to prison. They will not cause the correctional system to cater for all kinds in better and more ways. And I suspect they will not even result in better mental health and psychological support in prisons, which are full of people who need it. But perhaps they will save one or two from being placed in writ cells to battle their own demons alone.
Wow.
The coroner made a series of recommendations, a few of which looked really relevant to Tammy's case. She said that writ teams should include, or at least have access to, a psychologist. That a support person should be able to join review meetings remotely to advocate for the inmate and give them the help that they need. That writ teams should have to name in writing which correctional officer will be responsible for managing the inmate on each shift. And that the guard should have to document hourly any changes in behaviour or health of the person they're monitoring. After Bailey's inquest, Corrections did its own review of the processes used by writ teams, but we don't know what came out of it. A spokesperson told us Corrections welcomes and carefully considers each recommendation made by a coroner. But these recommendations came to nothing, because Corrections New South Wales rejected them. I couldn't speak to the coroner in Tammy's or Bailey's case, but I could speak to someone who's been in their place, who used to sit in that chair in the New South Wales Coroner's Court. His name is Hugh Dillon. He's a veteran coroner and an advocate for prison reform. Now that he's left the court, he can speak more freely about the hurdles he faced navigating the coronial system.
It's under-resourced. That's the main thing. It's really struggling to do the kind of work it should be doing, and in particular, doing the kind of work it should be doing to prevent or help prevent future deaths.
And he doesn't hold back.
There is no capacity for the state coroner to follow up recommendations or to demand answers or response from government departments or ministers. If you don't follow it up, it's almost pointless. It's just a performance.
Mm. So the coroner is a toothless tiger in the sense that it can recommend whatever it wants, but it doesn't necessarily effect change.
Yeah, in a sense. And in Bailey's case, the coroner handed down those recommendations and Corrections New South Wales simply rejected them. And this isn't an uncommon scenario. In about a quarter of the 39 cases we found, Corrections didn't support the recommendations in full. Sometimes because they're not feasible, sometimes because they already have policies in place, or simply not enough resources. There's no obligation for the implementation of these recommendations. And even if they were implemented, the system is exhausted. Right now, the number of people in New South Wales prisons is the highest on record.
I think corrective services, I think Justice Health, they're trying hard. What they do have is an influx of more and more people coming into the system.
And a growing number of them have a history of mental illness. And he's not quite sure
what we can expect if we keep asking the system to get better. If we keep putting more people with serious mental illness into prisons rather than into hospitals or under much more comprehensive community care, but we don't give it the resources it needs to do better. So there's no simple solution to any of this. And, you know, governments I know have all sorts of priorities, and this is, I hope, one of them, but I think it's quite low down the list of their priorities, and I wish it were higher.
The New South Wales government told me it's appointed two extra coroners to help with the workload, and that it's considering recommendations from a review into the Coroners Act.